Hi, it's Warren here talking a bit about emerging technology. So, welcome to the podcast. This is the first episode, kind of the introduction, and it's something I've been wanting to do for a long time, was to help people who would like to know about the kind of emerging technologies that I follow. Specifically, that's AI, blockchain, and nanotechnology, with some other things mixed in there. And we'll get to that in a moment. But the reason was is that I have conversations with people all the time, and I find that most people don't get a chance to read up on all these topics. And it's what I've been doing for quite some time. Today, I'm an advisor to several companies, and I manage my time. So I keep a lot of time to study and attend conferences, watch videos, and find out what's coming next. And I'd like to share that with you. And more importantly, I'd like to share with you how you can make sense of this and use it in your own life. So let's start off by a little bit about me. How did I get to this point of being able to do this podcast? It started out a long time ago, as a small child. Now, we won't go back that far, back to the dinosaurs. We'll go back to when I was grown and thinking about such things. I had an occasion to think about it and said, I'm gonna live the rest of my life in the future, and I can't change anything about the past. I think I like the future. And sure enough, I've had talent trait tests and all sorts of personality things that tell me that I'm focused on that. The way I think is I'm always thinking about what's going to happen and way far out. And boy, I like to say some people view the world from 30,000 feet. I try to come down to 30,000 feet every once in a while. I'm out there. I'm a space cadet. It's who I am. And the good fortune of that is having been born in the magic year for turning 20 when microprocessors come out. There's a book I'm sure you've heard of with the 10,000 hour rule and what is it? The Outliers. And it's by Malcolm Gladwell. And the story he tells there is about things that happen when you turn 20 years old. Set what technology you can get in on and what you can do. In my case, it was 1975, the year that microprocessors came out. And you might have heard of a couple other guys born at that time, Bill Gates, who's done a few things, Steve Jobs, who did many things. And the other one that was profiled in the book was Lovejoy. I believe he was Sun Microsystems. At any rate, it goes on then to talk about other things that made it lucky to be those other guys. And I looked at what I was doing when I was 20, a little bit different. I wasn't into the tech as quite as much, but I've been very interested. I was off doing something else, and didn't have the same background, so that's where the comparison ends. So, yes, I have to tell you, if I could be doing what my brother 2 months older was doing, Mr. Gates, I used to joke that if I'd have been 2 months earlier, I could have got the money. Well, there's a lot more to it than that. One is a good lot of good circumstances and a whole lot of work and some luck in there, and he got that. And meanwhile, I got into the PCs and ended up actually working in that. My specialty was laser printers. Then come along the internet. Well, I'd been online doing things since 1981. I got a computer hooked up. First thing I wanted to do when I got a computer, because the games weren't very good on mine. So a lot of opportunity to communicate. And that continued quite a bit. Started a business and used the CompuServe quite a bit with that. And sometime around 94, I was getting bored and said, I'm looking for a new adventure. And I said, what about this thing that I'm doing where they're hooking up bulletin board services together and communicating on this thing called the internet? And I said, that's great. I'm gonna go do that for a while. So while I'd been on the internet myself, I hadn't really thought of it as something of coming together with what I was doing. But public internet in the 90s allowed us to do commercial things that we weren't able to do as much in the 80s. Communication was one of the few things that worked well with text files. And so I did that for a while, came up with by the time social media came around, I already had lots of connections, a large mailing list that I sent email to. We were selling stuff online, and it would just seem natural for me to be able to organize who those people were. I'd studied what a CRM is. So that's the customer relationship manager that every business has today in some form. Contact manager, call it whatever. I thought it was part of accounting. Not so, as I later found out, but lots of people did. And so when LinkedIn came around, jumped on that. And when they allowed adults on Facebook, I was on it right away. And another thing called Twitter. I wrote a book about Twitter called Twitter Revolution. It's now called X. But back in the day, in 2008, we thought this was a cool thing to do. And it was really good that I could have a book that would be the first book ever written on the topic. And sure enough, to this day, I can say I wrote the first book on Twitter. Had a writing partner, and we wrote the first book on Twitter. And sure enough, kept going like that. Well, when sometime around the teens, I realized, hey, maybe I ought to get in on something and really invest in a little bit more than time and get some potential capital build up from it. And I knew about blockchain, and so I started writing and talking about that quite a bit. Started advising a few companies, and a couple of those have done well. I've also been paid in some crypto, which is kind of being held till I need it when the body breaks down and I need the money for something, maybe, or pass it on to heirs. And so then I found out that's so much fun. Let's do it with everything. So I'd like to focus on a few technologies here and stop talking about me. Well, that was torturous for me. Was it for you? The technology that I've spent a lot of time with since 2017 is blockchain. And I say blockchain, other people say crypto. That's the most well-known thing about that. The Bitcoin really is going to change our monetary system over time, already has, and will continue to. And the crypto, the popular myth is that if you just pick the right little coin and, you know, buy a little bit of it, and then maybe buy a bunch of those, so in case one doesn't make it. It turns out most of them don't make it. Most of them aren't backed by companies or by a sound business plan. And so early on, I decided this is wonderful technology. We should be using it to make a better business. And George Gilder, famous futurist who I've always followed, just met him a couple of weeks ago. He said that everything that was online, this was in 2018, everything that was online, everything that we built needed to be converted to go onto a blockchain network. And the basis of all the business solutions for this is databases. It's a bunch of data. It's all the transactions on your credit card. It's all the places you've been in GPS. It's all the customer records in a business. It's everything is turns out to be a database, or in simpler terms, spreadsheets, because that's what everybody uses sooner or later. But those are all databases. If you have a list of people, that's a database. Text, maybe not, depending on how you look at it. It's data, but it's not really the database. But most things end up being something that can be assembled into some sort of rows or columns, or some more advanced ways of sorting the fields. And they said when all of that needed to be moved to a more secure location, I got, wow, that doesn't seem like we're ever going to get to all of that. Hasn't Google already got to everything? Aren't we already have that solved? And someone explained to me that I had written a blog before, and I've done many podcasts before. And some of those just get lost in time. Photos that you've taken, you just can't find them. Because maybe you get rid of the computer or the phone, or you make a mistake and erase the hard drive, or the disk goes bad. What, for whatever reason, you lose this. And blockchain is set up so that no data is stored on just one computer. And so for blockchain to function correctly, you need the data stored in a lot of places. And just like imagine a spreadsheet, that row one is data, row two is data. And then at some point you could sum them up and say, this is the sum of them. And if you leave that as what usual spreadsheet programs do, you can go in and change that. But if you're storing this data as a record, you don't want it to be changed. You want the actual transaction as it happened, the way banks do. And that takes a whole lot of horsepower and security protocols and things to keep going, but not on blockchain. So what happens is every 10 or 100 or 72 records, whatever it is, they add them up and they come up with a number based on the number of characters or an encryption code or whatever. They put that block together and then they create the next block, and the next block starts by referring to the block before it. And that way they can be hooked together infinitely. And then each one of those records is stored on thousands of computers in different locations. And rules are set so that if I want to go back and change row number three, I need to have consensus by all the other computers that are storing that chain. Not likely that somebody's going to go hack into, let's say out of 1,000 computers, going to be able to hack 500. So there's some technical stuff here. And by the way, if you're good at tech, you might have already given up or written a bad comment. That's okay. I'm trying to make this as simple as possible, the way I explain it to friends and family, because I think this is an important concept to get if you know that from here on out, that's going to be important to the way we do everything. It's decentralizing business. And instead of the centralization where the big government or the big company controls all the data. So a whole lot of talk all the time about the social media keeping all your data, and or, you know, Google knows where you searched and all that sort of thing. Well, it doesn't have to be that way. There are protocols in place now where you can run everything you do and keep control over your data. If you do need to share with other people, blockchain helps that out, where there can be complex contracts on who gets to access, when, under what circumstances. And then you probably have heard of the keys, a big long key. They keep track of that in a crypto wallet. If you lose one of those, you lose everything. It's encrypted. It can't be retrieved. If we go about thinking that way, we start rebuilding everything that way. That means when I send an invoice to a supplier, the supplier knows that invoice came from me because of the digital signature. It doesn't take care of making sure there's never any fraud or anything going awry. If I order a shipment and it gets transshipped by boat and plane and train and car and delivered to my house, I know that what is said to be on there was checked at multiple points and is there. I used to get shipments like that all the time. Get a carbon paper or NCR form where you press hard, you're making five copies, and some of it would be stored at the first place that it originated, some of it would be stored at the distributors. And when the truck came to my business, I had to sign for it. And I said, is that a 14 or a 19? The truck driver didn't know. Let's count them. And it would be one or the other. It might be 17. And we just didn't know why that number didn't line up. Or maybe somebody even in a ledger or later computers screwed that up and put in the wrong number. And so you were billed for 19 instead of 14. And all of those things can be audited and found out, but with the blockchain, it doesn't need to be audited. It's just there. With that kind of transparency and immutability, immutability means that it's stored in a lot of places. You can't, you won't lose it. And the encryption, it's pretty much a safe way to do things. So far, while there's a whole lot of stories of ups and downs in crypto and what is the price of Bitcoin today and is it going to go sky high and all that, the important thing is that so far, there's never been anybody that was able to break in and steal Bitcoin from somebody else. Few of the other cryptos, yes, but overall, that when you see thefts and bad things happening, it's because of bad people using the technology. And boy, that's something I've been thinking about a lot lately, that people ask me about AI, and I guess I'm kind of switching topics. Let's talk about AI. I was at a conference recently talking about beneficial AGI, or artificial general intelligence, when the computer's smart enough to communicate with us like it's a human, and instead of just taking instructions like the chatbots do today. And the overwhelming opinion was that we needed to do something to teach the AGI right, because we were only going to get one shot at it, and then these very smart computers were going to take over. And I thought, well, isn't that kind of silly? I want to have an AGI that helps me find out what the other AGIs are doing wrong and what to do about it. We've already said, if they're going to be evil, take over and kill us all, there's nothing we can do about it. That's too far gone. They're already outwriting their own programming at this point. I don't think that's what's going to happen, or at least not in my lifetime. And I can't figure out, you know, what's going to happen 500 years from now. But it seems to me that these creatures are going to be more or less as benevolent as we are. Now we got to think, how good are my ethics if I'm going to impose my ethics on an AGI, or it's going to learn from me? It's still a tool. There's a big secret to how artificial intelligence works. It's algorithms. It's computers. It's running code. It's ones and zeros at some point. When that all gets figured out and the computer is able to communicate with you in English like it's your buddy, it still doesn't have the same emotions and desires and intent as you do. It can imitate that, but it doesn't have, the cells are just not there. And we can add sensors, and we can tell it that if, you know, you take a hammer and hit your finger, that hurts. It could learn that, but is there any reason that it's going to learn that it wants to conquer the world? More likely is going to be there's some bad actors out there that are going to want to conquer the world using these technologies. And so the only safe alternative to me is you've got to spend your time being a good person using the technology. If you put it off because the technology might go bad, well, then the bad guys are going to have a chance to get ahead. So overall philosophy for me, for this program, and for everything I do and teach, is we've got to embrace the future. It's coming fast, and we should take advantage of everything that we can. And so that leaves nanotechnology as the other thing I like to talk about. And it's kind of a placeholder for me. I've not yet been involved with a company creating nanotechnology, and that's atomically precise manufacturing. There's some other things, nanobots in your bloodstream, and some of them built with chemicals. And there's a lot of interesting things there. But I go back to the original definition of atomically precise manufacturing, meaning you build from the atom up. And it turns out that everything we know about physics in human size doesn't work the same at an atomic level. And they're exploring that. They're learning that. Physics knows a bunch about it. But one thing that most everybody agrees on is the materials that we're going to be able to work with in the future, or our AIs, the AGIs are going to be able to work with for us, are going to be able to design and make anything they want of any size, shape, or delivery point in very rapidly. Good news is, I think ultimately, all these technologies are going to take care of us. And working is going to be meeting with other people, caregiving, in enjoying relationships, things like that. And a lot of the drudgery of what we call work is going to go away. And so it's a great time to be alive, I think. I'm planning on sticking around as long as possible. Probably on this show, we'll talk a little bit about that too, how the breakthroughs in biology and these other technologies are going to make it so that our lifespan and our healthy lifespan has extended quite a bit. No one wants an extra 10 years at the end of their life. They want 10 years of healthy life. And I think that that's very, very possible. That's a whole show by itself. So we'll be explaining some of the technology. Drop me a line if you want to have a question answer. Look for forums and links where you get your podcast. Be sure to subscribe and like and share and all that good stuff. And we'll talk to you next time.